Welcome to Friday's edition of Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. This is our second week with Brian Newman as our guest speaker continues his five-week study into music and the mind. At the end of our series, we hope that you will have a better understanding of what qualifies as good music by providing historical, scientific, and most importantly, biblical examples on music and its influence. And now, here's Brian.
Well, welcome back to our Voices of a Dying Planet series. We are actually going into our 10th session now, and we are continuing really what we were doing in our last session that we did, looking at the industry. You'll remember we covered the area of what the music industry itself has to say about the origins of the music that they are doing, and we looked at all the different categories in the music industry, the management. We looked at the rock and roll industry, the jazz industry, and it was a very revealing study, right down to the rap, techno, rave, all the forms of music that are currently popular. And you'll remember that we started off our whole session by taking a biblical text, and I want to remind you of that biblical text again. And the one text came from 1 John 4 verse 1, where we are admonished to test the spirits to see if they are from God. And Matthew 7 verse 16, where Jesus said that we will know them by their fruits. And he asked the question, do men gather grapes or thorns or figs or thistles? And we are going to continue seeing in our next session here and the ones that follow up, where is the fruit being picked from? From the vine, which is Jesus Christ, or from the orchard of Satan? Where is the inspiration coming from? So we are going to continue looking at some of the connections. We saw the connection most certainly with the voodoo ritual music that was used in pagan ceremonies and how it came from Africa into our modern forms of music and how the industry told you itself. Clearly that this is what happened. We are now going to, though, have a look and see if there is more concrete evidence that comes from the industry that reveals very clearly the spirit that is motivating and driving it. Some things that are very common nowadays is that you may see a lot of occult symbolism that is being used, perhaps on record covers, on magazines, and so on. This is besides just what is revealed in the music, but in the printed material, the advertising, occult symbolism is very often used in many of these things. One of the things that quite commonly appears nowadays in the days in the rap, the techno and rave scene is ancient Egyptian symbolism. For example, you may often have the ankh, which is worn, that which is the cross that was used in Egyptian worship. The ankh is worn often by musicians as they wear this thing hanging around their neck. Often you will see pyramids being represented. And so on, all of them indicating to us, somehow giving us a clue as to the connection between what is being revealed in their printed material and advertising, and of course what really is the philosophy behind that which people are using or referring to in the industry. One of the things that is very common is people will often talk about the peace sign. Now, you know what the peace sign supposedly looks like. It is a circle with a stripe and two arms going down off the central stripe, or the central beam in the peace sign symbol. Most people don't realize, though, this has nothing to do with peace. It was basically popularized in the music scene, and of course became a popular symbol in society as well during the hippie flower power era of the 60s and 70s. But really it is an ancient occult symbol which is used in the initiation of somebody into an occult group or coven, where they will actually make out of ceramic or clay, they will make a symbol which is a circle with a cross with the arms not yet bent down, as you find in the peace symbol. And the person being initiated into that occult group or coven will take a hold of those two arms made out of ceramic. And then he will blaspheme the name of God, he will repudiate Christianity and dedicate himself to the cause of Satan or the Luciferian God, and then he will take those two arms and he will break them. And basically the breaking of those arms signalizes very clearly his rejection of Jesus Christ. And what the peace symbol, so-called peace sign symbol, is actually a blasphemy against Christ. It's an upside-down crucifix with the two arms broken. And then what will very often happen is the person that has been initiated will wear around his neck on a chain the peace, so-called peace sign, the symbol or a ring on his finger. Those who belong to the occult will know that he as well is part of their cause. Yet today, unfortunately, we find Christians who are actually wearing this and thinking that it's symbolizing peace. But Satan is getting tremendous joy out of seeing Christians wearing something that actually symbolizes him, and it is in fact a blasphemy of Jesus Christ. The connection, though, to the occult in the music industry goes far deeper than just symbols and signs, which you pick up and find on the printed material, on the record covers and albums and so on. The connection goes much deeper. In fact, many of the people in the industry are followers of some or other occult system. Many well-known people in the industry, for example, are followers of the philosophy of a man by the name of Aleister Crowley. And Aleister Crowley is a very significant figure for two reasons. One of them is that he put together, or he defined a law which was connected to the satanic doctrine, and this law today lies at the heart of the satanic Bible. And that law says, "Do what thou wilt," is the whole of the law under love. Of course, Aleister Crowley is not talking about the biblical concept of love. And when he says, "Do what thou wilt," he's basically expressing the philosophy which has been adopted by the rest of the world, and that is, you can do whatever you please. That was the whole concept behind the hippie flower power era, and which was, of course, instigated by the New Age movement. And that basic concept is that we can have free love, free sex, everything, as long as it's done under love, as long as you consider your fellow man, as it were, while you are doing these things, all of these things are perfectly acceptable. But the Bible teaches something completely different. Not do what thou wilt. The Bible has a whole 10 commandments which clearly show us what God's will is. And the first and foremost consideration is to consider what God wants you to do. And ultimately, that you love God first, above everything else. And of course, that clearly shows that when you make a decision in your life, you will ask, what would God want me to do? And secondly, that you love your fellow man. The Ten Commandments are broken up into those two categories, love for God and love for your fellow man. If you look at the Ten Commandments, for example, you will see that the first portion of the commandments deal with your love for God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. No idols, shall not bow thyself down to them. All the way through to the command to keep holy the Sabbath day. All have to do with your relationship to God. And then the second part of the Ten Commandments have to do with your relationship to your fellow man. Thou shalt not kill, shall not steal, honor your father and mother, shall not commit adultery, shall not covet, and so on. Have to do with your relationship to your fellow man. But the law, as it is found in the satanic or pagan doctrine, has to do what you want to do. That is what counts. Aleister Crowley, though, even more significantly, put together a system of magic. And he said that if ever this system of magic was to be combined with the power of music, you would be able to revolutionize the world. And of course, we looked at the way that music has been used to create revolution in the world. We looked at some of the statements and quotes from people in the industry themselves who clearly show that they wanted to change the value system of society. Many of the musicians in the industry have been members of the Church of Satan, which was started by Anton LaVey. And of course, based on the teachings of none other than Aleister Crowley himself. Anton LaVey today, of course, he is dead, but there are still many members who are in the industry who belong to this church. In fact, back in the 60s and 70s, the theme song of the Church of Satan was the song which was written by Mick Jagger, which was "Sympathy for the Devil," sung by the Rolling Stones. Another influential figure that also has had an impact to a large degree on what is happening in the music industry, and of course had a lot to do with the 60s counterculture revolution, was a woman by the name of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. She was the founder of the Theosophical Society. In fact, she's probably the most important single figure of the 19th century occult revival. And she's the author of many books, including the book The Secret Doctrine, which was released in 1888, in which she attempted to reconcile and unite Eastern and Western occultism, which, when you really get to think of it, was not such a difficult thing to do, because the basic doctrines in Eastern and Western occultism were go right back to the time of the Tower of Babel. Sun worship and the basic pagan concepts were all the same, and they were just included in Madame Blavatsky's secret doctrine. She wrote many books, and of course Theosophy Today, the books of Theosophy, the writings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, form the foundation for the philosophy of the New Age movement. The New Age movement based their teachings in occultism, and Blavatsky is most certainly an occultist, a spiritualist, as they would call them back in the early days when spiritualism was really gaining ground in the time of the 1800s. Now, the influence of these two occult figures had a very big impact on people who were involved in the music industry. You find, for example, and I can give you a few examples, there are so many examples, and I will give you some testimonies from the people in the industry itself, but one person, for example, Jim Morrison of The Doors, he believed that he was possessed by the demon or spirit of a dead Indian chief. And when he got married at a satanic Wicca ritual wedding in 1970. During his affair with Scandinavian beauty Ingrid Thompson, they actually cut themselves and drank blood from champagne glasses while they were making love. And of course, you can read about this in the industry's own magazines. This is recorded in Mojo magazine, September 1999, where that clearly tells you that. And by the way, the industry itself is not shy about the things which they are involved in. They will tell you pretty clearly what it is they are doing. And another man, interestingly enough, who most people would not connect with the occult, but yet indeed was dabbling in those things himself, in fact was took interest himself in the writings of Aleister Crowley, was a man by the name of Sting. He, after acting in two movies, Fade, which was the character he played in the movie Dune, and then later on in the movie Brimstone and Treacle, he referred to those characters. He said, "I am very lucky that I can exorcise my shadow or my demon on screen." So that he has a musician who feels that it's quite appropriate that you can exorcise your shadow or your demon on screen, reveal your darker side, as it were. In fact, the article in this book, The World's Greatest Composers, says that these characters fitted in perfectly with the Prince of Darkness label that he was earning. Of course, we know as Christians who the true Prince of Darkness is, and that he's none other than the devil himself. The attitude of musicians towards God, towards the Bible, is notorious. In fact, I'll give you a few examples. Mick Jagger, for example, spoke about Jesus in the book Towards Soviet America on page 317, and he said, "If Jesus had been indicted in a modern court, he would have been examined by doctors, found to be obsessed by a delusion, declared incompetent and incapable of pleading his case, and sent to an asylum." The press secretary for the Beatles, Derek Taylor, speaking about their anti-Christian sentiments in the Evening Post, August 864, he said, "They are completely antichrist, so much so that they shock me, and this is not easy to do." Even Ringo Starr in Playboy magazine on February 1965, page 58, he's speaking about Christ. He says, "We are not just antichrist and anti-Christian," with some of the sentiments he expressed. "Jesus is dead." This anti-Christian, anti-Christ sentiment is something which pervades the atmosphere of the music industry. In fact, in the One Mojo release, which is an industry magazine, music magazine, they said there on the cover, they were speaking about the dark side of rock and roll, and they stated on the cover how rock and roll really did dance with the devil, and indeed it did. If you go back to the origins, in the book Ultra Kill, which is a rock and roll music industry magazine, you'll remember I quoted to you in our last presentation that we did, how they said there that the connection between rock and roll and the devil was there from the very beginning. Elvis Presley was a follower of the writings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky right back in the early days of rock and roll. He used to regularly visit a psychic in Denver. His bodyguards and those who were close to him claimed that he thought he could form clouds with the power of his mind, and he believed that he was a reincarnation of Christ. In fact, in a book called Rock and Roll Babylon, where the author of the book is actually a reporter and is friends with many of the people in the music industry, and in fact he supports the music industry, it's not against it, but he records some of the early history of the rock and roll music industry and what happened with Elvis Presley, because many people thought, well, Elvis Presley is a good young Christian boy, he wrote Christian records and so on. Of course, those who know will remember that in the early days he was condemned from pulpits across America. But what happened there was, is after that condemnation, his record sales started going down. And Colonel Parker came up with a good idea and suggested that he write Christian music and sing some Christian songs. And that's what they did. He sang some Christian songs, released some Christian albums. And the next thing, his record sales started taking off again. Because now the parents were not forbidding their children to buy his records because he was apparently playing the devil's music. In fact, even the parents started buying his records and were saying, but he's a good young Christian boy. He sings gospel songs, and as a result, Elvis Presley became known as the King of Rock and Roll, one of the biggest selling names in the history of the rock and roll music industry. It is interesting when you look at the kinds of thoughts which pervaded some of the musicians in those days regarding their music and what they could do with their music. Jimi Hendrix, for example, spoke about the music. He said that we are making our music into electric church music, a new kind of Bible, a Bible you carry in your hearts, one that will give you a physical feeling. You see, they understood very clearly, Jimi Hendrix and many others, that the music was physical. It had to do with adrenaline. It was concentrating on that aspect that needed to be stimulated in the human organism. In fact, he went on to say, we are trying to make our music so loose and hard-hitting so that it hits your soul hard enough to make it open. We want them to realize that our music is just as spiritual as going to church. And of course, they understood very clearly the spirituality of the music that they were playing. But the kind of church that they were involved in, if one could use that term, was not the Christian concept of religion. It was occultism. It had based in voodoo ritual, as you have seen the testimony yourself. In fact, Jimi Hendrix was the guy who wrote the song Voodoo Child. He spoke about the music. He said that atmospheres are going to come through music because music is a spiritual thing of its own. You can hypnotize people with the music. And when you get them at their weakest point, notice that, at their weakest point, then you can preach into the subconscious what you want to say. Another one, speaking about the music and where he got the inspiration from the music, for the music from, is Carlos Santana, speaking about the Supernatural album which he released recently in Mojo magazine, September 1999. In an interview, he said there is a sound vibration, a resonance that rearranges our molecular structure to the point where our hair stands up. And he goes on to say, you feel like touching bodies, horny, all at the same time. And he says it is a whole other kind of spirit. Regarding where he got the inspiration from for that album, he said to Rolling Stone magazine, he said, in my meditations, this entity called Methatron said, we want to hook you back to the radio airwave frequency to reach junior high schools and universities. And once you reach them, we want you to present them with a new form of existence. So the aim once again was to reach the children, separate them from the world of their parents, like David Crosby said the intention was in our earlier seminars, and then present them with a new form of existence. Of course, it's a new philosophy, which was not based in the philosophy that the Western world in America particularly was built on, and that was biblical principles. He speaks about the origins of the music as well, and he refers to some of the different kinds of rhythms. He speaks about the Latin frenzy and the Spanish frenzy that people are playing, but he says it is really African music that Ricky Martin is playing, that Jennifer Lopez is playing, and that I am playing. Goes back, of course, to the African roots, as we have already seen. Don't forget that all of this was to capture the minds of the people. You will remember in The Secret Power of Music on page 153, I quoted last time Mick Jagger as saying, "We are moving after the minds, and so are most of the new groups." And then a final statement I'd like to share with you in this session, David Bowie speaking about the origins, and this is in a Rolling Stone magazine interview in 1976. He said, "I believe rock and roll is dangerous. It could very well bring about a very evil feeling in the West. It has got to go the other way now, and that is where I see it heading, bringing about the dark era. I feel that we are only heralding something even darker than ourselves. Rock and roll lets in lower shadows and elements." And then he says something very astounding. He says, "Rock has always been the devil's music, and you can't convince me that it isn't. The testimony of the industry itself clearly supports what we are trying to reveal, and that this industry is based, and the music that it is doing is based on doctrines and teachings that come from the devil, and they testify to it themselves." Join us next time as we continue to look at the origins and the testimony of the people in the industry. Thank you for your time, and may God bless you. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Faith on the Line with Amazing Discoveries. You really can't argue where the roots of the music came from when you have history and major musicians in the industry all saying the same thing. As Brian asked us, where is the fruit being picked from? I hope you'll continue with us as we continue our study into the language of music. To order a cassette of this message for a suggested gift of $7, please call Amazing Discoveries at 1-866-572-9457. Another resource we are featuring this month is Brian Newman's book entitled From Rock and Roll to Rock of Ages. The book is $17 Canadian, and in it shares Brian's personal testimony of how the Lord changed his life from rock musician to being broken on the rock, which is Jesus Christ. Brian's book also helps provide biblical insight into choosing good music and covers many of the insights you'll be hearing over the next few weeks. The book can be purchased by calling Amazing Discoveries at 866-572-9457. To write to us, please send your letters to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3. And for our U.S. listeners, please write to Box 4480, Blaine, Washington, 98231. You may also visit us online at www.amazingdiscoveries.org, where you can listen to past radio programs or watch video clips on a wide variety of Bible topics. Once again, that's amazingdiscoveries.org. We would just like to thank you for your support of Amazing Discoveries. Your continued support will help others be edified and strengthened in their walk with Jesus Christ. I'm Jason Hernberg. Be sure to tune in next week as Brian continues with the Voices of a Dying Planet music series. We'd like to leave you with a song now produced by Brian entitled Jacob's Ladder. That's all for now. Have a great day, and we'll see you on Monday.
soldiers of the cross, soldiers of the cross.
You've just been listening to Brian Newman with a song entitled Jacob's Ladder. Brian Newman is touring the US and Canada this fall, sharing his research and insights on music in a number of churches across the country. If you have enjoyed his presentations on the radio, we would greatly appreciate your kind donations to help finance the music series Voices of a Dying Planet, being brought to North America in November. Brian's series have been a blessing to many in the past, and we thank you for being a part of bringing that blessing to others with your donations. Your tax-deductible donations can be sent to Amazing Discoveries, Box 26012, Richmond, BC, V6Y3V3, or call us at 1-866-572-9457. Again, your donations are tax deductible, and you can even call us with a Visa or MasterCard number for quick processing of your donation. Brian's message is a vital one and needs to go out to all churches around the country. If you are interested in booking Brian Newman for a music series in your church, please call the office at 1-866-572-9457.